Hi, welcome to Listen in Michigan. I'm Deborah Holchip, the editor of Michigan Today, and as you are well aware, it is presidential campaign debate season. Here to speak with me today is Aaron Call, the director of the University of Michigan's number one ranked debate team. In April, the team will be competing for the national championship against none other than Harvard. Aaron has some interesting things to say about the presidential candidates and their performance, about his team's prospects for the national championship, and he has some tips for us civilians about how we can best win debates in our regular lives. So let's go to Aaron, who's about to talk to us about his favorite time of year that only comes around once every 4 years. Here's Aaron.
Every few years, the country, the world becomes fascinated about debate, and not just in the United States. When I was in Las Vegas with the Republican debate, Japan, Germany, across the world, all of a sudden become fixated with debate. And for someone that's devoted their entire lives to debate and has been doing it for so long, that's great to see. And I think it's great for just debate in general. And so you have to strike while the iron's hot and make sure that you take advantage when the spotlight is on debate.
You're not the only one. Have you heard about this website, predict.com, where you actually can place bets and win money based on how you're betting regarding the outcomes of the various debates and all different factors surrounding them? There's tons of social media. There are drinking games that people are playing based on how many times a candidate says a certain word. Like, what do you think about all this side activity around the debates?
Anything that brings more eyes to the debate and TV screen, I think, is great. And I think a lot of these are products of social media. You know, these are things you see on Twitter and Facebook that we may have not seen in debates, 10, 20 years ago because those weren't so popular. But no, I've seen all of those. And the prediction markets themselves are great kind of to see who the public thinks is going to, who won the debate, eventually is going to be the nominees. Those are things that even real academics look to in terms of, well, if people are actually risking money on those things, then they must be serious. And so for a while, it was Marco Rubio was doing well, then he had a poor debate performance. Donald Trump has done better recently. But no, all those things are great, and they bring more attention to the debates themselves. And I just think that this cycle has just shown in general the importance of debates. Donald Trump chose not to attend the debate in Iowa, and I think that decision backfired, and he ended up losing by a few points, even though he's favored by about 5 points or so going into it. And even after the fact, he admitted that that was a mistake, and he probably should have attended, and it may have cost him with some late deciding voters. And you saw New Hampshire, Marco Rubio had an excellent performance in Iowa and was on pace to do really well in New Hampshire, and then the debate just a few days before, he did really poorly in, and he fell all the way to fifth place. And he also admitted that, yes, it was because of this poor debate performance. So it's great that it brings attention to debates and shows the importance of debates, which is certainly something I believe very strongly in. But then when everyone else, you kind of get these examples of it, it's great to see.
So that's debate at the presidential level. What about the collegiate level? What is it that makes debate at the college level so compelling and exciting for you?
There's nothing like working with the best debaters in the country at a school like Michigan, competing against the other top colleges and universities, Harvard and Northwestern and Dartmouth and places like that. And so just kind of, working with the best and smartest kids and then seeing them go against the best that the country has to offer, being at that highest level as someone who's really competitive and loves debate is something that I really enjoy.
Well, and it's working out for you. Your team is ranked number one, right?
The last coaches poll was released in December. They were ranked number one in the country, just ahead of Harvard. And the goal for them is to kind of finish a little unfinished business from last year and try to win that first national championship for Michigan. We've been second place 4 times, 1989, 91, and then the last 2 years. And we'd love for them to be the team that brings the first national championship home to Michigan.
So can you give us a little preview? What will the team be debating against Harvard in April?
And this year it has to do with the reduction of United States military presence from around the world. And so we have forward deployed troops in places like Japan and South Korea, some in Africa. And when you're affirmative, you have to argue that it'd be a good idea to withdraw those troops take them somewhere else, bring them back to the United States. And when you're negative, you have to argue for various reasons why that'd be a bad idea. And you have to go affirmative and negative half the time and to make it even and make sure you have to argue both sides. And we have that's the overall resolution, and then you have a lot of sub-resolutions, so the topic doesn't get stale. And so what effect would doing something like that have on the president, his agenda, our economy, our relations with other countries, our leadership and hegemony? And so there's a lot of kind of sub-issues about that. And so we'll, for the next few months, be preparing about that. And now with Justice Scalia's untimely passing, how that affects Congress, the political process, the president's agenda, whether he appoints someone and they get a vote, there will be, I think, an interesting intersection with that of politics and action like withdrawing troops. That could be a major issue come in April.
So talk to me about this number one ranked team. Who are they and what makes them so spectacular?
William Morgan and Joseph Krakow. Both of them were excellent high school debaters, one from the Washington, D.C. area and the other from Atlanta. And Will was the university's nominee for the Rhodes Scholarship this year. And so just a brilliant guy, does a lot of philosophy, is presented at international philosophy conferences, very well read in critical literature. And their kind of knowledge and research and all that make them very formidable and very, very tough to defeat. And in addition to kind of the research they do and just their you know, general smarts, their work ethic is, I think, unparalleled in the country. We have a debate office in the Michigan Union, a conference room for the students to use whenever they like, and they live in the office. They're there during the day, late at night, in the morning, and so they are just, you know, I think, outwork everybody else. In addition to being, you know, full-time students, the top debaters in the country work at least probably another, you know, 40 hours minimum per week just on debate, and no one is working harder than them, and it's really paying off in the results, you know, that we've had this year.
Well, the stakes are pretty high. You're competing against Harvard. That's got to be a lot of pressure on you, right?
Kind of having Michigan and Harvard 1 and 2 this year is a great part of that narrative, and if that gets some more attention and eyes on debate and the team, then great. As you know, our alums are so competitive, our debate alums, you know, parents of the debaters, everything like that, and so yeah, when they see that, they said, well, you know, then, you know, Michigan is, you know, you have all the joke of, you know, Harvard being the Michigan of the East and things like that. And so no, you know, Harvard or whoever it was, they want Michigan to be number one, just like within football or anything else. And no matter who the competition may be, they expect and want us to be number one, whether it's debate or anything else at the university. And we're certainly aware of those expectations and do everything we can to try to meet and exceed them.
This is mental athletics. You're competing with your brains.
It is, but at the same time, so much of it is physical too. I mean, obviously you're speaking a lot and you're researching, but to win a national championship, to win a debate tournament is physically exhausting and draining. The days are long and the pressure, especially when you're a senior and you know this could be your last debate ever, parents are there sometimes watching, is great. And so there's the mental aspect, but also just the physical, making sure you're getting enough sleep, making sure you're eating properly, exercising, all those things you wouldn't think, you know, these aren't athletes, but the rigors of it, of debate and what's required are at the top level are just extraordinary.
And sometimes the payoffs can be unexpected. I understand you met your wife as a fellow debater on the college circuit. You guys competed against one another. She won. So what's the deal? You married up?
No question. Yes, she is a debate national champion, you know, master's degree from Chicago, law degree, worked in the private sector, now is an attorney at Chrysler. So I definitely married up. And she, we were rivals. We didn't like each other. And because you debate and then, you know, you lose, and never would have thought about, you know, could imagine being married to each other. But not even really friendly. Then we both worked at the University of Kentucky summer camp for 3 weeks after we both graduated. And when you're just teaching high school students and not actually competing against each other, they're no longer debating, you kind of see each other in a different light. And yeah, and we've been together ever since that, 2001.
That's such a great story. Okay, so I have to shift gears now to the Flint water crisis, which has been making national news for quite some time now. Interestingly, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton will be bringing a Democratic debate to Flint, Michigan, and I am curious to hear your thoughts on what you see as the outcome there. What do you see on the horizon?
nothing but good things. I see no downside at all. Democrats have had much fewer debates. They've occurred on like weekends and holidays and on networks and haven't got much media attention. And so there was a big, you know, kind of, okay, we need some more Democratic debates, especially since this contest is going to be so close between the two of them. And there was a lot of acrimony between the two campaigns about that. The Sanders campaign would agree to do it in Flint only if the Hillary campaign agreed to do a debate in Brooklyn, and so they were fighting. So I wrote an op-ed for the Detroit Free Press about it, basically saying that Bernie should agree to just unilaterally debate in Flint. Now, if they want to have another debate in New York, that's fine, but it's just so important for Flint to host the debate no matter what. That's the most important thing. Because there's a debate in Flint in early March, that guarantees that the issue is going to receive the attention that it deserves in the run-up to the debate, during the debate, and then immediately following. And it also ensures that a good portion of the debate will be about Flint, about what went wrong, what we should be doing in the future, what can we do to mean that something like that will never happen again. And so I think it's just going to be great. I mean, you saw in this last debate, the death of Scalia dominated the first 15 to 20 minutes of the debate. I think the same thing will happen in Flint. I mean, it's not going to be the entire debate, but it's going to be a disproportionate amount of time and questions on it, which would never happen if it were held in somewhere else. And so I think all that's great, and it'll make sure that the spotlight remains on Flint. And also, I just think that it's going to be a great thing for the city of Flint. You're going to have all these people flying in from around the world, getting hotel rooms, renting cars, eating at restaurants, the media visibility, and so I think it's a win-win, and I'm so happy that they agreed to it, and I can't wait to attend and see how it goes.
Okay, so now we're going to do a little something different. I want to do a little word association with you. So we're going to talk about each one of the candidates. I'm going to say the name, and you give me your first thoughts about how each of them has performed in this campaign season. So let's start with Bernie Sanders.
I think Larry David. I know it's terrible, but I just the same thing with like Palin and you know Saturday Night Live when she was parodied. It's to me they're kind of like the same person, but. I think of him. I think in his debating, I think of his message, and you know for free college and things like that. But no, I just can't shake the association with him and Larry David. But he did the great thing about embracing it, going on Saturday Night Live. That's what the only thing you can do. But no, I was a huge Larry David, Curb Your Enthusiasm fan, and I just every time I see him, I can't and hear him even just the voice. I think of him. So that's the thing.
I'm sure you're not alone. Okay, so how about Hillary Clinton?
I would say laughter. I think that her best tactic is during debates, anytime there's something or she's on the ropes, she'll laugh and kind of play it off. And I think that's a really interesting technique that works for her.
Okay. How about Jeb Bush?
He's very measured. He's very serious. And I think he's become a much better debater as we've gone on, but very serious.
Okay, that brings us to Ted Cruz. What's the first word that comes to your mind when you think of Ted Cruz in terms of his debate style?
I'd say phony. I think that he's very polished, but sometimes I have a tough time thinking that what he's actually saying that he really believes. He's almost too good and too polished, and so I'm a little skeptical, I guess.
Okay, that brings us to Marco Rubio.
Aspirational. He's has a very forward-looking vision and an excellent speaker and young, energetic. Can certainly see why he's attractive to a lot of people.
And Donald Trump?
Boisterous. Great command of the room and never backs down, always doubled down. You think, oh, he's going to have to apologize for the mistake. No, he'll just he'll become more involved and even more forceful about it.
How about Chris Christie?
Yeah, I mean, like I'd say a tank. He was real short in stature. I got to see him in Las Vegas, but so powerful. I mean, you saw him take down single-handedly Marco Rubio, and his line about there it is, or it's going to be something that we replay in debate history for forever, just like with the Ronald Reagan line, "There you go again," and things like that. And so I think Rubio is very happy to see him no longer on the stage. So his legacy may be that he stopped the kind of Rubio coronation. But
okay, and we'll end with Mr. Kasich.
Sunny, optimistic. He's always wants to rise above the fray, and no matter how, you know, kind of combative the debate stage gets, he believes in compromise and kind of working together, and always is trying to rise above the fray and present kind of a sunny disposition about what politics potentially could be.
God love him. Okay, so before we wrap, I was curious if you, as a debating professional, could give us civilians some tips about how we could win debates in our own lives. What are some things we should keep in mind?
I think critical thinking is the most important, and always being able to think about the perspective of the person you're debating with. So, you know, we know when debating, okay, here's our best points, but thinking critically and thinking almost like chess, many steps ahead, I think is important. So don't just say, okay, I'm just going to say all these things and just going to win. You're going to say, no, okay, here are my three best arguments, but what is my debate adversary's three best arguments? And then what is my response to those? And how is this going to kind of, you know, proceed back and forth? For most issues, there's always two sides, and so it's not like, you know, you're just 100% correct and there's no other competing side. You've got your major strong points, but then whoever you're debating is going to have them as well. So you need to think several steps ahead and think, okay, when I deploy these, what's the response back going to be? And then what's my response to those things? And kind of, you know, and think of it that way. Never underestimate, you know, the person that you're debating. Also, always kind of making sure you're in the right frame of mind. You don't debate well when you're angry or you're, you know, kind of off kilter. You want to make sure that you're in a good place, and never take debates like that personally, because a lot of times then they can get to you and really affect your ability to debate well. So, you know, kind of view it as a game, as a, you know, strategy, and even with like ad hominem attacks or, you know, personal things like that, never take them that way. Never let that interfere with the quality of the arguments that you're making, because that's ultimately what it comes down to.
Do you ascribe to the dictum, quit while you're ahead?
Yes, always quit while you're ahead. And that's true in debates, and it's true in everything. Sometimes you get into trouble by expending those extra time that you don't need. You'll say something that all of a sudden, then now all of a sudden your opponent has something to latch onto. So certainly quit while you're ahead, or, you know, you talked earlier about negotiations. Being able to say yes and to accept something, a compromise, an offer, and just kind of knowing there's a lot of back and forth, and everyone's not going to get everything they want. But if both sides can kind of walk away feeling good and satisfied, you know, then everyone is a winner and can be happy.
Well, that seems like the perfect place to end. Thank you so much, Aaron Call. Good luck to the team in April, and I hope you enjoyed listening. See you next time, and as always, go Blue.